This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's usually with great affection that people refer to film director John Waters as the king of bad taste. He earned his crown with his early works, such as Pink Flamingos, in which the main characters vied for the title The Filthiest Person Alive. When Pink Flamingos had its 25th anniversary re-release last year, Waters said, "It's hard to offend three generations, but it looks like I've succeeded." Waters' latest movies have more to do with making audiences laugh than offending them. Waters' comedies like Polyester, Hairspray, and Serial Mom are, as he puts it, about people who are nuts but think they're the sane ones. His affection for these characters always comes through. His new movie, Pecker, is set in Baltimore, Waters' hometown. It stars Edward Furlong as a young man who takes pictures of everything around him. He creates an exhibit of his photographs on the walls of the Greasy Spoon where he works. A New York gallery owner sees it, loves it, and suddenly Pecker's world collides with the New York art world, and his life is turned upside down. I asked John Waters to describe the character of Pecker.
Pecker is certainly an innocent Fred John Waters character, but he's not stupid, and he's a local photographer in kind of a blue-collar neighborhood in Baltimore that is obsessed by taking pictures of every single thing around him, from the cheeseburger that's sizzling on the grill where he's a short-order cook, to his very strange grandmother who believes that the statue of the Virgin Mary in her bedroom talks to her nightly. All the things Pecker takes picture with, and he got his nickname from picking at his food as a child, was that the he thinks are completely normal. He's used to them, and he is merely recording for his own obsession the world around him. So that is what Pecker is like. And he's still a good guy when the New York art world notices him for all the right reasons. They like his pictures for the right reasons. They're not looking down on him. But they are taking his images out of context. And that is where the dreaded irony enters the picture and changes Pecker's life and his world around him.
And what is so dreaded about irony?
Nothing. I make my living from irony. Irony is paying for the cup of coffee that is sitting right here I'm drinking. That is what I sell. But I am the first to realize that irony is snobbery. Irony is a class thing. Certainly, if you're so hungry, nothing is so bad it's good. Irony is infected in all American culture. It's the main thing in all culture, on television, in radio, everything. But so sometimes I get weary of it. But I'm being hypocritical myself because I celebrate irony in all my movies. That's the main subject matter usually.
How would you compare yourself as an artist to Pecker?
Well, I never say the dreaded art word. I mean, that is up to history to decide. Not even your peers, the real meaning of the word art. I think I'm a film director and a writer, really. They're very different in some ways because I knew the irony. I was in on it from the beginning. I wanted the New York world. I wanted show business to discover my movies. And I made it not very hard. I mean, I sent them press releases, so it's not exactly like they stumbled upon it in the beginning. But at the same time, the subject matter that Pecker takes pictures of, I may have taken those same characters and turned them into my own characters through writing and exaggerating them and everything. I don't think Pecker exaggerates them or takes them and puts them into any other form than the form that exists in.
And he was so interested in the details of his world. I have a feeling that you were kind of bored by the details of your world, so you made up this kind of fictional world that was larger than life.
Certainly. Whatever I was obsessed by, obsession was one of the first feelings I remember as a child, and not negatively. It's not like I couldn't step on the crack or I'd break my mother's back. I wasn't that crazy.
Well, that might be compulsion anyways.
Well, yeah. But I wasn't obsessional neuroses, like where I had to, you know, like have tic syndromes and have to do things over and over, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I did get very interested in things that I knew from the very beginning no other children were interested in, and my interest made my parents nervous. So I tended to keep it secret. And at the same time, I would exaggerate it and make it much more ludicrous and insane than it was in real life. So maybe I was bored. I was bored in school, certainly. And it seems like after I learned how to read and write very well in grade school, but I didn't learn much else that they're supposed to teach you in school afterwards. But in junior high, I learned about scary girl delinquents that really I use as much as reading and writing in my later work. And in college, in high school, I learned about defiance and being against authority, which is certainly I also used in my movies. But after grade school, my interests were very much discouraged.
Can you think of something that obsessed you as a kid that later entered your work?
Well, I've talked about it so many times about car accidents I used to play as a child, and I put it in Female Trouble, and then people were wondering why I love the movie Crash, basically, but now I don't even look at a car accident. You know, once it ends up in my movie, sometimes it's over with. Certainly Hairspray, I was obsessed with this television show, the Buddy Dean show that came on in Baltimore. But the kids that were on it every day, I drew them and exaggerated and made up insane biographies about how they stabbed the principal and stuff, and just to try to amuse myself. So those were two that come to mind, certainly in the beginning.
John Waters is my guest, and his new movie is called Pecker. The character is named Pecker because, as a child, he only pecked at his food.
Well, my director of photography said, why isn't his name Picker then? Which is a point. Certainly, I knew that I was trying to have a title that I could push as far as I could go and get away with it. And I did get away with it, except in Oklahoma City and Tulsa, where they refused to run the title. But I don't think we're playing there anyway, so it really wasn't that much of an issue.
What if your film was called Pecker the Woodpecker? Would they have not?
Well, there was many titles. I mean, still shocks me. How did they ever get away with that? Today, I don't think you could. I mean, that one seems more offensive than any title, really. But I brought up Free Willy, which I think is is the most. Willy and Pecker, in a dirty way, are the same kind of, very close in meaning. It's just the English way to say Pecker. The Motion Picture Association of America initially turned it down, but only because they saw the title. They didn't know what it was or anything. We had a hearing, and they overturned it unanimously. They were very fair about it, actually.
Do you like playing?
But I had to go to court. It was like OJ, you know, I had to wait in the other room and then come in, and they didn't look at me, and I thought, oh, God, I've lost.
What did you have to say in defense of yourself in court?
Well, we had lawyers who also talked, and then I gave a little speech saying that, you know, the word pecker is never found in obscenity. If you try to talk dirtily with the word pecker, people would laugh in your face. Men rarely refer to their penis as a pecker. It's a threatening word to men. It means little in a way. Women use the word mostly to their kids, I think. I think it's a word that makes women laugh and men uptight. It's also, as I said, no child ever angrily carved the word pecker in his school desk. I mean, it's not a hostile word at all, I don't think. And I said, in this case, the movie is about a young photographer who wants his good name back. And in this case, the good name is Pecker.
We laughed.
They came back in and they unanimously overturned it.
Do you take a lot of pleasure in using a word that some people think of dirty, but as dirty, but on the other hand, it has different meanings, and depending on the context, the whole color of the word is changed?
Yeah, and I found a dictionary that I took with me that only had one definition, pecker. Something, a person who takes food with a sudden movement of his head. And I doubt anyone has said that word in that definition ever in the history of language. You know what I mean? Oh, how could you say it that way in a sentence? I don't know what it would be. I guess a bird is a
bird
pecker,
pecks at his food, yeah.
Yeah, but pecker, the word, it said one who takes food with a sudden movement of his head. And I it had no other definition, and I neglected to tell the MPAA that really the dictionary copyright was 1957.
My chicken.
When they couldn't put those kind of words in the dictionary.
John Waters is my guest, and his new movie is called Pecker. Now, one of the games in your movie, I thought this was really a scream. This is a game called Shopping for Others. Would you describe how it's played?
Well, it's really not an original idea. It came from my friend Greg Gorman, who plays himself in the movie The Photographer, and he plays this game with his chef in Beverly Hills. And you go into a food store and you put in other shoppers' carts items that they would never, ever buy when they don't see you. Like you put in Spam, a rich person, or like, I don't know, Preparation H to a muscle man. You know, things that they'd be really embarrassed to have in their cart. And it causes anarchy in the supermarket. And it's a harmless form of food terrorism, really. And I've done it, and people have done it to me in the Giant here when I came back home. So I have to, every time I go to the supermarket, watch my cart to make sure that somebody doesn't do it to me.
Oh, so this is a game that two adults play now that you know, huh?
Yes. And they go further. Actually, what they do that I didn't put in because I thought it might cause a dangerous trend is they unwrap a candy bar and hand it to a child in the back of the cart when the mother isn't looking. And then she turns around and says, hey, where'd you get that? And smacks its hand, you know. Put that back. And the child's like, oh, like sitting there.
A lot of the locales in your movie are, you know, diners and cheap bars. And one of the bars is called the Pelt Room, and it's a lesbian strip mm-hmm. joint with heterosexual mm-hmm. male clientele. And so all the men in the joint are always verbally abused by the lesbian strippers as they dance.
Right.
It's very funny. How did you think this up?
Well, I think, you know, basically that one of the top male heterosexual fantasies is lesbians. And they believe that they're going to give them what they really need, when in reality, that is the last thing they really need. And Divine and I used to see a stripper at the Gaiety Burlesque in Baltimore, who this is based on. Only she didn't even strip, she just came out nude. And she looked like Johnny Cash, and she would look at the audience and say, "What are you looking at?" And they loved it, and I never got over it. I've been talking about it for 30 years, so I finally put it in a movie.
My guest is film director John Waters. His new movie is called Pecker. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is screenwriter and director John Waters. His new movie is the comedy Pecker. Now, Pecker's grandmother in your movie is somebody who has, you know, a statue of the Virgin Mary, but she thinks the statue's talking to her.
Well, she helps it along like a ventriloquist.
Exactly.
I mean, she fools herself, really. She says, "Full of grace," all the time. I think it's kind of
reverent. Is that your voice, by the way, in the movie?
It's not mine. No, it is. It is Jean Shirtler, the actress who is playing the part. But of course, at the end, there is a real miracle, and that is a heavenly voice that I interviewed about 30 women over the phone for the voiceover, and it was like dial a prayer. They called me every 10 minutes and did the Hail Mary for me, and I picked the voice over the phone.
And did you know anybody who was like this, who had a statue of the Virgin and believed that she was talking?
No, I did not know that. But I was a puppeteer when I was a child.
Ah.
And in Baltimore, people have religious statues a lot in their window. I mean, you see them really a lot. And I think I just put the two things together. And my hobby is extreme Catholic behavior before the Reformation. And I have a lot of books about Mariolatry, the extreme undue worship of Mary. And I'm kind of obsessed by it because the people that get into Mary are really into her. I mean, this is a cult. This is beyond Jim Jones. I mean, and there's a new cult that believes that Mary is better than Christ because she had him. And these debates to me are so strange and so surreal that I am very interested in it. And it seems if there ever is going to be a real miracle, it will be Mary. She appears more than anybody else in Phony Ones. So why it goes along in thinking to think if there ever is going to be a real one, that it will be Mary.
You were brought up Catholic, right?
Half Catholic, yes. I went to private school and Catholic Sunday school, which is a real, quite a combination, believe me, because they only have you one day a week, so they really got to get you there. You know, they only got you 1 hour. So the most extreme Catholic stuff, they would tell you. And I remember as a child feeling like I was on Mars or something, you know, that all the nuns would tell us this stuff that I thought, my God, I've never heard of these movies. I'm not going to do any of this stuff. I'm 6 years old. But then, you know what I'm saying? But they told me about all these mortal sins that I never even knew about, really. So they were my guidance counselor in filth, really.
So this is how you got your interest developed in extreme Catholic behavior?
Yes, yeah, by seeing it as a child and being amazed. I mean, they would say, "You will burn in hell if you see these movies." How would I see these movies? I was six. What was I going to go downtown to a burlesque house at 7 years old? You know, I don't know how they thought I was going to get there, even if I wanted to see them.
You've described yourself as making movies about people who are crazy but think that they're sane. I think that's a pretty good description.
Yeah, because so many people I know in New York are insane and they're happy about it, and that's why they moved to New York, to celebrate that. And I would describe most of my friends that way. But to me, I make movies about people that think they're the most normal people in the world, but to me seem even more insane, and that's what interests me.
Now, a couple of the characters in Pecker are homeless, and I'm wondering if you talk much with homeless people and if there are any homeless people who you've kind of adopted in a way, who you bring food for or hang out with and talk.
There was a woman that used to live with Edith Massey named Jean that was in some of my earlier movies. And
yeah, and Edith Massey is known to John Waters fans as Edie the Egg Lady.
Yeah. And Edie took her in, actually, and that was the one I knew the best. And it was, she would never let water touch her body. So she was like the Wicked Witch of the West. She watched and washed in rubbing alcohol. And every night she and Edith would watch two separate televisions in the same room, the same show. Because they kept it private, you know. And she worked for Edie, and really they tried to give her money, but all she wanted was Pall Mall cigarettes and a can of SpaghettiOs. So her needs were really not so much. And at the end, when Edie died, she went back on the streets and people offered to give her apartments and everything, and she would never, ever do it. It was very, very sad because she didn't believe Edie died, and that was the only person that she would ever go inside and live somewhere with. And she looked great. She looked like Sonia Rykiel, the designer. She had a great look, accidentally. So I know that's probably very politically incorrect to think of homeless and fashion together. But in this movie, Pecker's mother tries to help the homeless by teaching them fashion sense. And certainly some of the most expensive and the most eccentric designers today, their clothes are rags in a way, and it does look like homeless. So in the movie, when the homeless people and the New Yorkers get together, they're dressed alike. And they realize that, and they sort of celebrate that.
Did Edie take in the woman who you were describing as an act of charity, or because she just felt emotionally connected to her?
Edie just liked her. She helped Edie. You know, she was kind of Edie's assistant. And we all liked Jean. She was great. And then she ended up, she was in Desperate Living. And she used to come to all the Christmas parties, all the parties. She came, everything. She'd get real dressed up, a big Christmas corsage. And she was great. And it just was very, very sad. And I know that she's put away today somewhere in a place. I hear she's okay. I know one person that visits her. But when she was out, she would not go back in a place. You could not get her. It wasn't money. It wasn't anything. It was just, I think, that she felt cooped up anywhere else. If so, she likes sleeping on the street, and they wouldn't let her eventually.
John Waters is my guest, and his new movie is called Pecker. I'd love to get some of your impressions of The Star Report. I mean, a lot of people say it's almost something John Waters could have written. Have you been following this carefully?
I have been following it. I don't think it's very witty. I think I certainly know people, and I'm not even saying myself, that have done worse. I'm not going to judge another man's private life. At the same time, I feel bad for him. I think he should go to Mortville, actually, which is the town in Desperate Living where you get sentenced to if you're so embarrassed by something that you've done. but other than that, I guess how can you not read about it? But I'm weary of it. And, you know, Linda Tripp, to me, is the one that should be in prison. I mean, with friends like that, no wonder she was doing that kind of thing in the White House. I mean, I don't know. The whole thing, to me, is bad, bad taste. I would never put any of those women in my movies, and I still really like Bill Clinton.
I'm wondering, you know, as someone who does wear the crown as the king of bad taste, as someone who has, you know, challenged what most people consider the standards of decency in so many of your movies, particularly the early ones, do you think that the way The Star Report has been handled is kind of changing public standards of good taste?
Well, it's been handled in a completely political way and using fear of sex in a political way, which is very Republican to me. Basically, the only good thing, I have a friend that said this, is that every person in America is talking about sex. I've heard my parents say things about sex to me more than they've ever said in their whole life. I said on the Jay Leno show, it's true, though, all the people are so worried about their children. What do we tell our children? Just say she took patriotism to a new level, really. she honored her flag. It's not the worst thing that could have happened. He wasn't bombing a country. They had sexual fantasies, and they did them. I like sexual fantasies. I hope they keep these sexual fantasies, and 20 years later, when they're in a sort of, their marriage is maybe a little boring, think of them, and it will perk up their sex life. That's the only good that I think they can use whatever happened for, and I hope they do remember it fondly.
Well, here's what I'm wondering. You had to go to court to defend your right to name your new movie Pecker.
Well, picture court. It wasn't like I was in handcuffs. I've always thought there should be a motion picture jail, but I wasn't threatened with it.
Nevertheless, I mean, you had to bring in lawyers and fight for your right to name your new movie Pecker. At the same time, you know, very explicit testimony was put on the internet by the House Judiciary Committee. President Clinton testifying about intimate sexual details shown on television. What does that make you think about?
It makes me laugh that the Supreme Court may have to rule if oral sex is in fact sex. And that could be the final thing. And that will be, you have to admit, a Mad Magazine day of the Supreme Court, that they will have to sit there in all their judicial splendor and decide if oral sex can be considered by the average man to really be sex. That's insane to me. It is hilarious. At the same time, I'm glad it's not about me. I mean, everybody loves to read this stuff, but I'm glad it is in my sex life that everybody in the world knows every single thing about. Every person's sex life is embarrassing. Everybody lies about sex, especially to themselves.
Do you see this story as a tragedy or a comedy?
I don't see it as either. I certainly don't feel it as a comedy because I never can laugh at people when they're embarrassed. I think that's the cruelest laughter you can have. A tragedy? No. No one died. No horrible political movements have started. There's no oppression of people that like oral sex in the White House. It could be worse.
John Waters, he wrote and directed the new film Pecker. We'll talk more in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with screenwriter and director John Waters. His new movie is the comedy Pecker. His early films like Pink Flamingos, Mondo Trasho, and Multiple Maniacs earned him the title The King of Bad Taste. You're in your early 50s now, and I'm wondering if your taste or if the kind of bad taste that you particularly enjoy is changing as you get older.
Certainly it is. Somehow I ended up making a happy movie about pubic hair harassment, lesbian strippers, trade hags, and talking virgin mothers. Who would have ever thought you could make a happy movie about that 20 years ago? Certainly the times are completely different than when I made Pink Flamingos. There's not a cultural war going on. American humor is bad taste now, and we have exported it all over the world. It has infected humor all over the world. So the American people's taste in humor, in everything from rap music to television, everything is so much closer to what I started out in that I feel like I retired from the battle of filth a long time ago and that my imperial margarine crown of filth is firmly placed on my head forever. And I don't really feel the need to try to top anything I've done. I think it would fail if I did. I think that's up to the new kids, you know, to make movies to get on my generation's nerves, like this movie Happiness that's coming out. That's an amazing movie. It's the best movie I've seen in 5 or 10 years, I think, by Todd Solondz. But I don't feel the need to try to do that when I don't really feel that at this point in my life.
Is there anything that you find you're particularly alienated by in, you know, youth culture today?
The only kind of movies I have trouble with is romantic comedies. You know, they're not my favorite genre. When an audience goes, "Oh," I start to cringe. am I alienated by anything? Just stupidity, really, is the only thing. And I have enough success that in my life that I can finally isolate myself from that. I very seldom have to meet people that I would hate anymore, which is the only luxury you can really work for. It's much better than any material luxury you can ever have in your world, is to never have to come in contact with people that would get on your nerves.
When you see teenagers walking around with, you know, piercings all over their face and God knows where else and tattoos all over, what does that make you think about? Do you relate to that?
I think they look cool, some of them. I think basically, though, I tell all the parents, don't care if they get piercing. That grows back. I mean, but it's the tattoos that I've said this before, but it's true. Someone will make a fortune taking all these tattoos off this generation because no matter how butch or how beautiful or how cool you look at 20 with tattoos, I promise you at 50 you will look worn out when you take your shirt off and you have a faded tattoo of barbed wire around your arm. At 50 will not be a good look. But if I was young, I would, of course, I've had piercings. I mean, I think the tongue I like, and I think the eyebrow one is my favorite. But now they're branding. That's the new thing, you know.
Right.
So I think piercing, and eventually they're going to have Ubangy lips. I think, you remember that, like in National Geographic?
Yep.
That, I think, is the next thing that will be coming on the college campuses.
It's kind of a plate in the lip extending.
Yes, a
the
plate
bottom
in
lip.
The lip, yeah.
John Waters is my guest, and his new movie is called Pecker. You've been managing to make movies with happy endings, no matter how improbable they are, no matter how they might seem to contrast with the larger subject matter. What do you enjoy about that, about finding the happy ending in this insanity that you're creating?
Because if we can find happy endings to our own insanity, what a perfect life that would be. I'm an optimist, a very guarded optimist, and I believe there are happy endings. And so I like to show them. My happy endings are not exactly what many people would think of a happy ending. But in Pecker, I mean, really, the New Yorker and the blue-collar sort of Baltimore people all get together and have a party at the end. And that's my idea of a perfect bar. If I could ever go to a blue-collar bar where it was gay people, straight people, go-go boys, go-go girls, all classes of people, and Patty Hearst dancing on a table, I'm in heaven.
And that's not the kind of happy ending where the audience would go, ah.
Well, maybe some of my audience might go, ah, but I'm not sure in what way they would exactly mean it. No, it's not Sleepless in Seattle ending, no.
One of the people who you discovered was Ricky Lake, who starred in Hairspray. And now, of course, she's a national celebrity with her daytime talk show, et cetera.
Right.
And, you know, she's lost weight and gotten cosmetic surgery. And in a way, I feel like she's repudiated the kind of character that you created around her. You know, someone who was considered, like, overweight and unattractive by certain mainstream people, but she was so comfortable with herself and had such kind of joie de vivre and was such a good dancer that she ended up being really attractive if you really saw her for who she was.
I think she sold that part, and that was certainly the part of Tracy Turnblad. I think physically, she probably feels a lot happier when she's not fat. And I know from Divine dropping dead from being overweight, certainly health-wise, it is a good thing for her. But when I see Ricky, I'll be honest, she still tells me, you know, look, I lost weight. I said, Ricky, I don't care. You know, I'm happy for you that you do, but you could wear 200 or 80. I don't really care about how much you weigh. You know, it has nothing to do with how I like you. But I think she feels better about herself. I think she looks great. She was at the premiere in New York looking quite beautiful. And I think because she played Tracy Turnblad, that does not mean that she wanted to live the life of Tracy Turnblad. Certainly it was not good for her health to weigh 250 pounds when you're 20 years old.
You've always been based in Baltimore, and some
right.
of the people you've always worked with, like you, still live in Baltimore. At least I assume they do, because I know that a couple of them have been working for Homicide, which is the
Certainly,
TV series
my
shot
dearest,
in Baltimore.
My dearest friend, Pat Moran, who cast many of my movies, and all of them, really, and works. She won the Emmy the other week for Best Casting of Homicide.
Oh.
Vincent Perenio, who's done my production design on those, is the head production designer of Homicide. Behind the scenes, many of the people on the crew have worked with me in many, many, many of the movies. So, and Homicide is my favorite television show, so I think it's so great. Where I Live is known for Bad Taste, Homicide. You know, it's kind of the reverse of what the city 20 years ago would have wanted to be known for.
John Waters, he wrote and directed the new film comedy, Pecker.